to the FTN Show.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. I'm joined tonight by Chris Morgan.
Hey.
And Adam Camilleri.
Hey. Play 40K every day.
Hey, we promised people we'd talk about Tyranids and Gene Stealer Cult.
We did. And man, there's a little bit to go over here, but it's kind of not the usual suspects. I feel like they're in a lot of similar ways the same as how demons got treated. A lot of their big gribblies went down in points, like, and they absolutely needed to. But all of the mainstays of their army have stayed the same. Like,
I think Aberrants took a little bit of a hit.
Oh, yeah, Gene Steel Cult is definitely. I was just talking about actual Tyranids.
Oh, sure, okay.
But yeah, GSC is an interesting spot. I was actually quite concerned of the two factions I was worried about the most. First one being Orcs, and the next one was GSC, because they're a very potent army that relies on about three or four different things to do all their damage. That being Aberrants, Rock Swords, the Flamer Bombs, and the Bikes. If any of those like were to get significantly destroyed or knocked out of the game, it'd almost be like a house of cards coming down. I don't know. So we know Aberrants have gone up, but I'm not quite sure. It's a death knell, simply because Acolytes stayed the same. I think Acolytes are where it's at.
Yeah, I think Aberrants being those kind of tanky units that you didn't take a ton of anyway, so them getting a little bit of an increase.
There was that Muscle Beach style list that Nick Nanavati used, and maybe he's to blame for this, Nick, because I think he dropped like one game playing that list at ETC. And he was playing 30 Aberrants in a list, which just seems obnoxious. But and he did really well with that. And yeah, now that, how many points have they gone up? Do we know the top of our heads?
I can find it. I can tell you what they are right now.
They're 19 points right now. And then the power pick is another 9 points. So they're 27. They're 27 points. That's a lot. See, my issue with Aberrants is they're a big bull unit, you know, like of an ilk of Bulgrin or Assault Centurions. There's big alpha destroyer unit. The difference is all those other units, all those other ones that cost around, and these guys cost around similar points per wound to those. The difference is they're so much squishier. Like, think of another big, beefy bull unit, like of an ilk to Sangard, that actually gives a crap of being shot by a bolter. Like, Sangard don't care about bolters. Assault Centuries don't care about bolters. Bulgrin don't care about bolters. But man, Aberrants, do not like bolters.
Aberrants were formerly 16 points apiece, is what they were in the Codex.
Okay, so they've gone up 3 points per model.
And the power pick is 9 points in the Codex.
Okay, so that's still the same. So they've gone up 3 points a model. Look, that's not insignificant. It might not be enough to kill them off completely, but you're certainly not going to build an army specifically around one unit of them. Around more than one unit of them. Maybe you have one unit in your army, and that'll be like your big play where you deep strike them down. They get all your CP. They fight twice. They do all the crazy stuff. But yeah, I think Acolytes being untouched is actually really big.
Percentage-wise, it's almost a 20% increase in points.
It's true. Yeah, it really is true. Yeah, 16 to 19. So what does that take their end result of a 10-man unit to with just a power picks? So it's what, 27 per model? So yeah, 270 points now. And that's if you don't take any of the stop signs, which are, wow, they're 25 points for a stop sign. So that's huge actually as well.
And you made a very good comparison to Sanguinary Guard, because a 10-man unit of Sanguinary Guard is 280 points now.
Except those Sanguard, they have the same, like they're both toughness 4, the same 2 wounds. And they can both, you know, they're both very dynamic. They can deep strike around the board. You can pick them up, put them down, give them great charges. They're really, really crazy good. Except for what is that? Did you say there was, it's 1 point per model more? So that means around, it's like 28 points for a Sanguard.
Yeah, it is 28 points.
They come with a 2-up save.
Yes.
And fly and movement 12. And you can make Aberrants
and guns.
Very quick.
I mean, they got range weapons too, which are not.
And guns. Now, I would argue that it is possible to make Aberrants more killy than Sanguard, because you can make them attack twice with +1 to wound, +1, +2 to hit, like all these crazy, you know, Might from Beyond and all these stacking buffs and buffs and buffs and buffs and buffs. But you can do almost the same thing with Sanguard. They only cost 1 point more, and they're like three times as resilient. So yeah, to my mind, like Aberrants, they might not be in a great place at the moment. But I mean, one of the great things about the GSD Cult book is it is quite deep, with options and with synergy. So I'm sure there's plenty there for the GSD Cult players to still sink their teeth into.
Chris, I almost segued us into Blood Angel talk.
Listen, I diverted the sack.
I was lurking. I was right on the wings. I was ready to just jump right in. All I need,
Were you upon wings of fire?
Oh yes. I was about to descend as angels do.
So the Ridge Runners, I think, and have a little bit of a reprieve, didn't they? So in the Codex, they're 50 points.
And now they're 35, it looks like.
And the Jackals, I think, are 10 points per model. Is that the same?
Can't quite find the Jackals. Oh, yeah, Jackals, yeah, they're 10 points.
Okay, so because, I mean, those are the things. Like, the Jackals, I think, are real dynamic and kind of, you know, one of the business ends of the Gene Stealer Cult army. So that's still the same.
And the models are fantastic.
Oh,
like, the models are. I can't, every time we come across a model with good rules and it's also got a good model, I have to let everybody know. Models, the whole Gene Stealer Cult range is really good.
I stare at those models sometimes and I'm like, what else could I use this for? Because I don't play Gene Stealer Cults really. You know, for a while, the figures were kind of coming with like every box set. So I've got a few, you know?
Yeah.
So like, oh, that'll make a great cultist, or I can make a kill team out of these guys, or, you know, or whatever. But I stare at those Jackal models. I'm like, oh, I really want to put this on the table and do something with it.
Yeah.
Is anything. I mean, probably not as GSC, not as a Jackal, but something, you know.
Rough Riders.
Oh.
Like, I'm hoping Rough Riders, they're probably going to get legended Rough Riders, but they are the best Rough Riders you're ever going to make, except for the Talan guys on the camels that Forge World did for like 2 weeks and then went out of production. those things are worth. If anybody has any of those sitting on their shelves, PM me, please. No, that's fine.
Gene Stealer Cults, I think, still got a lot of bite. Because, yeah, you're talking about, they're doing a lot of damage with the Rock Saws. And
The Rock Saws didn't get touched. The Hand Flamers didn't get touched. But these are troop units. Like, they are, I think it's them and Demons have the most killy troops in the game. They're being like Blood Letters Horrors and Acolytes, like the three of the killiest troops you can get. Point for point. And Acolytes are just, they're dirt cheap, man. And you can make them so flexible. Like, a unit of Rock Saws with the right synergies and the right buffs put on them can kill anything in the game.
It's demoralizing when you're being the recipient of Rock Saws. I'm like, they do what?
Yeah.
How many do you have? Like, what?
On top of that, Rock Saws, if they weren't so squishy, if you are a very well-versed Gene Steel Cult player, there is no profile in the game better at killing Marines than a Rock Saw. Strength 8 or more, -4, +2 damage. That is the best profile in the game for killing Marines. So, like,
pretty much just may as well be called the Primaris Buzzsaw.
Yeah. Walk in, hit him on twos with some buffs, wound him on twos, no save, 2 damage, you're dead. So good.
Yeah, I mean, you do pay some points for the Rock Saw itself.
Yeah, you do.
But the body it comes on is nothing.
Well, so an Acolyte is 7 points, and then the Hand Flamer is 1 point.
Yeah, but the Rock Saw is, like, the heavy Rock Saw is 10 points.
Yeah, and that's fair. It's a better Power Fist. Like, I think you pay, is it 11 points for a Power Fist?
8 points.
Eight or nine points.
For two more points than a Power Fist, you don't take the -1 to hit, and you get +2 damage rather than D3. And I'd take +2 damage over D3 any day.
Yeah, give me some Rock Saws.
It becomes portable. Like, here's one thing that always trips me out about Gene Stealer Cult. So you're telling me these minor dudes, they're like bottom feeding minor guys, they're like neglected, they're like the scum of the people, you know, no one gives any two craps about them. And they're wielding better weapons than the Imperial Army. They're wielding better weapons than Space Marines. Where's my Bulgrin, like, with just two Rock Saws just spinning? Like, I'm just going to do this. But if you get hit, it's your own fault.
Like, the premise of a lot of horror movies is that the Home Depot, you know, like when you go into the power tool section, right. they really are some of the best weapons you can use.
Just give me like a Bulgrin, like throwing a lawnmower at somebody. That would make me so happy. Like a lawnmower on a chain.
Time to recycle the Ogryn Launcher.
That's right.
The Ogryn Launcher. It's so good. They're also something to point out about Gene Stealer Cult. Their mortars, they got the heavy weapons teams, Brood Brothers. Their mortars went up as well, the same as the guard ones. So I think that's good. Like, across the board, mortars just went up. That's pretty fair. Well, I'm not sure if the point increase was needed, but it's fair that they went up as well.
Let me play devil's advocate to the mortar.
Yeah.
For a second. Like, okay, I understand that that they became, you know, like, very plentiful. Like, they came on the table. They really were like a response to things like terrain, you know, like very, like, indirect fire is important, to a lot of armies. And if you did increase the points simply because people were taking lots of them, you know, that's not the best.
Yeah, well, it's true. And you think about when we, well, so we, the player base, have almost made an assumption that Chapter Approved was written around about 4 to 6 months ago. And 4 to 6 months ago, every army had their loyal 32 with their 3 units of mortars. And so that's very much probably a reaction to that. Because putting mortars into your loyal 32 was a way of getting value out of that detachment and not just bringing it for the CP. Because the mortars, you know, in ITC, you make them an engineer, you sit them on objectives. If not, or you just sit them out of line of sight on an objective and just rack up some points if you draw those Maelstrom cards or whatever format you play. But they're always going to get value. And there were 33 points for a unit of 3 of them. So it's 99 points to fill out your spearhead if you're playing it. And they were dirt cheap, very easy to hide, and always a good return.
So I guess that's it. So the overall like utility of the game function outside of just existing may be worth the point increase.
Exactly right. But with things like the advent of Space Marines, firstly, so the mortars literally, like, so most of the people are playing like successor chapter Space Marines and they take stealthy. Mortars will do actually nothing to a 1+ save Space Marine. Like, sorry, a 2+ save Space Marine. They might as well be throwing pebbles at them.
Yeah, agreed.
It's not going to do a damn thing.
Well, that was kind of one of my points. I mean, or at least the point I was trying to make is that the weapon itself, you know, they've dropped off.
Yeah.
You need some ability to reach out and touch some things, and then that's not even the best way of going about doing it. It was just one way that's some of the, I mean, I know the Gene Stealer cults have access to the guard stuff, but that's one of the easily accessible ways to indirect fire. Not that the Gene Stealer cults necessarily need it because they can just appear next to the
thing.
So maybe that's it. Maybe I've talked myself out of my point.
Well, so another model that's very relevant is the Kellenmorph. Old Jesse James has gone up. I think he's gone up 25 points. He's now 75. I think he used to be 50.
He was 60. He was 60 before.
Oh, so he's gone up 15. I think he's
at least in the Codex, he was 60. I'm not looking at previous Chapter Approved. I'm looking just in the Codex.
That makes sense. Yeah, 75 points for him. He's fine. I'm not sure if maybe a handful of the other ones have gone up, but like the Sanctus or the Locus or the Nexus or whatever. The Locus hopefully went down because that was like one of the only characters they had that I never saw. I haven't saw the Biophagus. We will try it.
The Locus is 40 points in the Codex.
Okay, so he hasn't gone down. He could have gone down 10 points.
I think. Well, I mean, sometimes just somebody becoming more expensive makes someone else at their current price point seem more attractive.
Yeah, exactly right. Very, very true.
I don't think you put him on the table but still.
Well, so on the whole, how do you think GSC have come out of this, Paul?
Yeah, I think pretty well. I mean, again, I think you saw some fringe lists, right, that did where you loaded up on the Aberrants or you did this or whatever, but it seems like the core is pretty much the same.
Yeah, I agree. I think the core of the list, I think people might be pivoting more off, of course, more off Aberrants, maybe more towards Jackals as their kind of tech. But I think just people will just be piling on more into the Acolytes as their hammers. Mind you, Neophyte hybrids, they're the guys with the whips, yeah? They're the ones that fight on death.
Yep.
They're not awful. Like, if you charge them into Space Marines and then pretty much just let yourself get killed, and you can trade a unit of, you know, 10 of mine, a unit of 10 of them for a unit of 10 Space Marines or something. That's not a bad return. Like, you've got a unit of 10, you charge 2 units of 5 guys, you fight once, kill half of both units, they kill a bunch of your guys back, you fight again, you finish off both.
But wouldn't you just rather kill them all and not have your guys die?
Yeah, but that's the thing, though. Other than using a whole unit of aberrants to clear a screen, how else do you clear screens as GSC? That's my thing. To get your guys nice and deep into their lines, I'm thinking about things you can start on the board that could run out and kill a unit of infiltrators. Because like, infiltrators are
actual gene stealers.
Well, Paul wants his cake, and he wants to eat it, too.
All right,
that's basically what this comes down to.
There's our segue onto proper Tyranids. Good call, Mr. Morgan. A lot of the big bugs have gone down, yeah.
Just to touch on the metamorphs, they do have the metamorph whip that you mentioned they get to swing when they die.
Ah, okay, so it's the hybrid metamorphs.
Yeah. Well, that's the metamorph whip. That's what you're talking about, the other things.
Yeah. The hybrid metamorphs, yeah, 7 points a model. Yeah. Mind you, there's some typos in here. Neophyte hybrids in the GSC book are 55 points per model, which we know is not correct, but yeah. Pretty funny.
You can put gene stealers in the gene stealer cult list. So, I mean, yeah, we definitely jump to Tyranids. And we actually haven't talked about their Psychic Fury or Psychic Awakening Blood Ball upgrades that they got.
I've got a couple of mates over here who are pretty excited about that. They're not quite sure that it brings Tyranids up to like super ultra powerful level, but they're just very happy that they've got some flavor, another tier.
If you were using some of this stuff already, then it's good. And like Exocrines, Action Kareens are actually pretty, they're pretty powerful, if you ask me, for what they can do, but you never really got to pop off their double shot very often because you're having to respond to things on the table.
I agree. I rate Action Kareens, because you can make them minus one with a, either unit of Venomthropes. I think the Venomthropes can't make them minus one, actually. I think you need a Malanthrope, so you need the Forge World, beastie, but making them minus one, giving them, one of the traits so that they get cover or, is it Jormungandr that gets, they get cover if they stand still or if they just don't charge or advance? Stuff
like
that.
So, yeah.
And then they double shoot and get plus one to hit if they don't move? That's crazy.
Yeah, if they don't move, then they get the double shoot. And I think you're right about the plus one. We can check that out. But there is a stratagem now that allows them to move and then count as being stationary.
Nice. So they're essentially a Lehman Russ now.
Yeah. So use a stratagem at the start of your shooting phase. Select one Exocrine unit from your army. Till the end of the phase, that unit is treated as not having moved in your movement phase for one CP.
I think that makes them quite good. And there's a lot of ways to buff them. Like if, you know, there's catalysts, there's all sorts of bits and pieces. Sorry, the only one I could think of them was catalyst, but, and their gun is, it's strength 7 minus 3, 2 damage, and they got like 8 shots or something, or is it 10 shots?
No, it's pretty ridiculous. I mean, let me pull it up, but they are. I mean, the gun itself is really strong, but again, firing it once is good, right? But you're never going to get to do its trick. Now I think being able to, in a low cost, low investment, do its trick, may allow you to seat on the table sometimes.
I hope so. Well, because I love looking at the big boys on the table, like the big bucks, and they've been very much unheralded, except for the spamming of hive tyrants, and that was pretty much what caused the rule of three to come into play, was people taking like 6 and 7 hive tyrants.
Oh yeah, this was a good thing. So let me go ahead and bring out 9 of them. It was nine hive tyrants. I mean, I don't blame them.
Yeah,
this is good. That's pretty much all of 40K throughout the history of everything. But yeah. To be fair, you know, it's like an army made of kings, if you know what I'm saying. It's just, there's a certain level of ridiculousness that apparently even 40K on the tabletop cannot maintain.
Yeah.
I liked seeing the nine high tyrants versus the 9 plague burst crawlers. I didn't mind.
Or the 9 tau commanders. Yeah, that was a good one.
Right, tau commander spam. That was another thing.
So the bioplasmic cannon is a heavy 6 with a 36 inch range. So this goes back into, like, this is why you could never fire it twice, because 36 inch range and then it's 6 shots and whatever.
Yeah. Because everyone knows it's a big gribbly with a big gun, and like, well, I just got to stay, you know, 36.1 inches away. This guy doesn't get to shoot twice.
Yeah,
he hits at minus one when he moves rather than being plus one when he stands still. So instead of hitting on 3s when he stands still, that 0.1 of an inch means he hits on 5s. It's so big a difference.
Yeah, and the symbiotic targeting is if the model does not move in this movement phase, you can add 1 to its hit rolls in the following shooting phase, which is significant because it's a BS of a 4. So, I mean, he's hitting on 5s if he moves, which is laughable now.
It is. It's really bad. And then let's say you're playing against Eldar. He's hitting on 6s or 7s. So, therefore, he can't.
Yeah, that's bad.
If he has to move, he can't actually hit an Eldar flyer. Like, it's terrible.
And so, but it is neg 3 AP and 2 damage apiece, string 7. So, you know, relevant, and now maybe even doubly more so, is if you can effectively make him hit on 3s and fire 12 shots.
And if he's Cronus, standing still, he gets to reroll 1s to hit because they got the same benefit as Cadian. So all of a sudden, making this guy be able to not move, he gets like 3 layers of buffs just from not moving.
He's tough to say. I mean, so...
He's tough. Yeah, with like 14... Is it 14 wounds?
It's 12 wounds, but still toughness 8 with a 3+ armor save. And 12 wounds, and then, you know, you could potentially buff them. I mean, I'm not saying you want to invest, you know, all your psychic powers and stuff into this one thing, but hey, if he's doing a lot of work, then why not?
Well, what's his gun called? Sorry.
It is called the Bioplasmic Cannon.
I thought so. It's 0 points. So he has 155 points. Now think about it like this, yeah? So he's 155 points, and he's essentially half a knight. With a better Gatling cannon if he stands still. So the Gatling cannon is strength 6 minus 2, 2 damage. His is strength 7 minus 3, 2 damage with 6 shots. But if he stands still, it's 12 shots, the same as the Gatling cannon. Now he's 155 points. So he's 310 if you were to take the same 24 toughness 8 wounds with the 3+ save as a knight. But he comes in at about 100 points less than that knight. So I think he is quite good, guys.
Yeah, well, certainly better, I'll tell you that. Because I think he was...
Yeah, yeah, it's like, a certain improvement. Yeah.
You never wanted to be... Like, you could be caught with this thing. Like, on a table where... So, you know, you're not familiar with his rules because you've never seen him or whatever. It could be a real bad experience for you.
Yeah.
So he was still kind of strong, but you just didn't see him for all these other reasons. Because if you knew what he did, you could just... You know,
making it ineffectual.
Yeah.
Or just
giving. Yeah, I mean the things that those models can't do that knights can is walk away and still shoot, and you know, have, you know, more reliable explosions and some invulnerable saves against shooting and things like that. I mean, it definitely has some excellent damage potential. I fought some at the tournament I was at this weekend, and it's definitely a priority to get those if they're not screened properly. So it is absolutely a dangerous unit, but I think that there's a lot in the new Tyranid, you know, points and in the new Tyranid rules that just provides kind of a bunch of options. There's a lot of obvious good things about Blood Angels, and we talked about those. But
we're
going to
keep talking about it. I played a game this past weekend.
let me tell you how we did this last weekend and how I'm expecting to do after. But there's a lot of sleeper options in the Tyranid book, I think, that are going to create a lot of interesting combinations. I think we're going to see a lot more Hyphlet Behemoth. I think that there's a lot of play with units like
why the Haru specs Behemoth? Now. Why do you say Behemoth?
Well, the Behemoth adds, if I'm remembering this correctly, the Behemoth adds some bonuses to wounding, and there's like where everyone was taking, I believe it was, it's not Leviathan. I'm trying to think of the name of the High Fleet. Insert ancient monster here.
Kraken.
Right? Everyone was just so used to Kraken. I think, you know, Behemoth Gene Stealers, you know, hitting, you know, wounding on twos, getting some wounds back. You know, the Haru specs, though, is the one that I kind of more interested in talking about, because you can basically heal up to, what, 5 wounds in a round of combat with the Haru specs?
I freaking love that model. I love that model. Did I tell you guys that I love that model?
seems to be that you love that model. There's even some like crazy 4d6 charge stuff that you could possibly combo too, where it's like you're getting one for a warlord trait, and then you're getting one that lets you roll and then drop the lowest. So you're rolling 4 dice, and yeah, you're dropping one, but you're picking the highest of the two. Like there's so much threat range with these monsters, you guys. Just so much.
Yeah, Behemoth's so, to reroll failed chart rolls. So, I mean, that can...
Oh, that's it. Know, that's it.
Very beneficial.
So, just having a quick look at the Haru specs. He comes in at 150 points now. I don't think he pays for... So, we've got Grasping Tongue and Ravenous Maw and Shoveling Claws. So, I'll have a quick price up of that and see where he comes at. Ravenous Maw, 0 points. Shoveling Claws, 0 points. And Grasping Tongue, where's that at? That'll be...
That sounds like a free win.
0 points. Yeah. So he is 100. He's just 150 points. Yeah, he's exactly right. You can almost pick him now. You're like, that one sounds free. But I mean, but it was. But yeah, so he's 150 points. He's toughness 8 with 13 wounds, 4 attacks, and a 3+8. Now, I love this guy so much. I'm 100% with Chris on this one. This guy can be really, really deadly. And more than that, you know, we all know that. Remember the concept of the distraction Karn effects. Yeah.
Yep.
The thing you put on the table, not to kill anything, just to draw everyone's fire. If you could just get this guy and just shoot him at people, just shoot him down people's throats, they will have to deal with him because he's too big and he's too threatening not to. Even though his damage is quite swingy because he only hits on 4s in combat, which I think is what holds this guy back. If he hit it on 3s, holy crap, he would be an absolute blender. Because his Ravenous Maw is, you make D3 hits for this weapon instead of 1, and that means that's its strength user minus 1 D3 damage. So he starts with 4 attacks. So he could have up to 12 attacks with that weapon, or he's got the Shoveling Claws. And I think there's a rule. Each time a Haru Spec slays an enemy model with this Ravenous Maw, so which is with its possible 12 attacks, it can immediately make 1 extra attack with this Shoveling Claws, which are strength times 2, so strength 14 minus 3 D6 damage. And at the end of a fight phase in which Haru Spec slew any models, it regains 1 wound. So, and then there's other ways to regain wounds as well.
There's a new stratagem, if I can jump with it, called Aggressive Adaptation, that uses stratagem in the fight phase when an enemy unit is destroyed as a result of an attack made by a High Fleet model from your army until the end of the battle, improve the armor penetration characteristics of melee weapons that models in the model's unit are equipped with by 1.
that's pretty sick.
You can only do it once per unit, though.
You only need to do it once.
Well, right. So you go into, like, you get one of these big monster units or whatever. It chumps some little scout unit or a unit of Reavers or something in the way, powers itself up, heals itself on the attack, and then jumps into the next guy at neg three or whatever.
Plus, they also have a stratagem that lets you have, what, a 2d6 consolidate?
Yeah, I love that one.
Yeah. I mean, I'm already drooling over the fact that Blood Angels will get a 6 inches heroic intervention for the low price of one command point.
Yeah.
Like a 2d6 consolidate. I mean, that's for, you know, kicking the can behind the can you just kicked.
Yeah.
Just take it away. That's good.
It's so good for overrun. So, you know, overrun works, you know, you kill the unit, and then if there's no units within 3 inches, you can move again for 1 CP. And then a lot of people were using the Kraken Stealers and paying 3 CP to fight again, and then piling in and wrapping another unit so you couldn't shoot them. So they're going from like one side of the board all the way to the other. And they're telling me now that they can make that pile in 2d6 instead of 3 inches. So you can slingshot. Like if people like leave a little unit out in the middle, they're thinking they're trying to screen you off. You just charge, kill that one, move again, activate, and then pile in 2d6. Like, you can just tag so much stuff. And Horn,
especially if you've got like a large unit of Gene Stealers or something like that. And those absolutely will benefit from that same aggressive adaptation stratagem. I mean, Gene Stealers are bad enough when they attack you in close combat. If going from -1 to -2 AP, just icing on the cake.
Totally. And then that'd be -5 on their rending claws, yeah? It goes from -4 to -5. So all of a sudden, they're going straight through Assault Centurions like butter.
Yeah, when you absolutely do not want to give your opponent a save. That's
that's right.
Aggressive adaptation.
The last one I want to touch on with Tyranny, unless you guys have any more, is Biovores. Now, Biovores used to be 50 points. Now they're 40 points.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I think Biovores are quite good.
Speaking of indirect fire, you know, we were talking about that earlier.
Yeah, exactly right, because they're indirect fire. They fire mortal wounds. They fire mortal wounds. I mean,
well, beyond that, I think beyond just the mortal wound potential of these models, there's a strategy that's been used with these guys that hasn't been used since Biovores, you know, in the beginning of 8th edition, where you are just dropping the mines all over the place just to screw with people's movement. Like, it has the benefit of, I'm going to inflict mortal wounds on you, and if I'm really lucky on the roll, maybe I can get, you know, 3 mortal wounds on you. Also, good luck moving your knight around this thing that it has to kill first.
One little thing that I got for free that's stopping you from moving. How funny is that?
it's basically like the elephant and the mouse. Like the...
They just don't automatically blow up if you come within... Like, what's... I thought they potentially just blew up if you got closer enough to them. I know you can shoot them. Like, I shoot them with las guns or whatever, and they go away, but...
Let me just go read to spore mines and see under what terms they explode. So, floating death, spore mine explodes within 3 inches of an enemy model at the end of any charge phase. Each time a spore mine explodes on D6, roll a 1, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So it's the charge phase. So you still have to stay an inch away from them.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So you can be within an inch of them. And then when it comes to the charge phase, if you're still there within an inch of them, they'll explode.
That makes it a good day for anybody who's got a jump pack.
Yeah. I mean, apart from you know, ignorance of Tyranids, they just have not been a force on the table since the early days of 8th.
It's very true. I mean, there's a couple of guys down in Australia there, and we get a lot of flack in Australia for having a wonky meta competitively, because there's guys down here who play Tyranids and do phenomenally well. Like, one of the best players I think in the world is a guy named Eric Lathuris, and he plays pretty much Tyranids. He went undefeated for 9 months playing pure Tyranids with a little bit of GSC at times. And he's the only guy I know of who makes Nids look genuinely scary.
With that kind of player, I think he's really going to appreciate some of these Blood Bowl stratagems. Like, there's one called Synaptic Channeling. The Synaptic Channeling says, use a stratagem in your psyche phase, select one High Fleet Psyker unit from your army. Until the end of that phase, the unit knows all the psychic powers known by friendly High Fleet Psyker units on the battlefield. So, you know, you can only take so many on a particular psyker, and sometimes you don't get all the ones you want, and then sometimes your 18-inch range doesn't cover the unit you want it to. So if you got to let somebody out of position, you just pop this psychic channel and he gets the power from the guy that's all the way across the table and he gets to put Cataclysm on something.
Cataclysm. Yeah. Catalyst.
Oh, but sorry. Yeah. Catalyst. No, you're absolutely right. Thinking the brain icon is the Cataclysm or whatever. Also something you haven't seen until, you know, recently or you're going to see now.
True. Last one I want to touch on is, I said that about the last one, that Bibles, but Tyranid Warriors went down in points, I believe.
That would be a blast from the past if they get back on the table.
Yeah, exactly. I think that Tyranid Warriors are another one of those sleeper winning units, because when you think about, you put them with like double Scything Talons and you just spam them across the board, they're a bunch of models with a 4+ armor save, with 3 wounds each.
Not enough.
Yeah, make them minus one each.
You can also give them some bonuses to their Rending Claws, like the AP on them. Like there's just a lot going on with Warriors, I think, that is going to make it a little bit more of an attractive unit for people nowadays.
I agree. And you can give each one of them a heavy bolter. Like the Death Spitter is a strength 5-1, assault 3 gun. I think it's only 18 inch rather than 24. I think it's only 24 inches rather than 36. But then you take a Tyranid Prime with them and he gives them all +1 to hit, so they shoot like Space Marines.
I think you guys are crazy. I don't want to point that out there. But they do get a stratagem called the Unyielding Chitin that reduces the damage of Chitin. Stuff that comes in by Chitin. 1.
People who know bugs will know it's Chitin.
Chitin.
Yep. Until the end of the phase, when resolving an attack made by a ranged weapon against that unit, reduce the damage characteristic of that weapon by 1.
That's significant. Because
to a minimum 1 for the attack, yeah.
Stalker Bolters. As soon as you make Stalker Bolters 1 damage, they're not very good.
Agreed. Yeah, because they're one shot. They don't get any kind of rapid fire, bolter drill, or whatever.
Exactly right. And a lot of time, they may be taking a -1 because they have to move and shoot and move to get in range to shoot you. And then you just, they're hitting on, possibly hitting on 4s, maybe hitting on 5s if you've got Venom Throat or a Malanthrope, wounding on 4s, and then damage 1. Because maybe you won't have to get a save if they're in Dev Doctrine, they'll be -3. But still, 1 damage, who cares? Like, a whole unit of 10 of those guys maybe kills 1 Tyranid Warrior. That's
so
a win.
You can use this stratagem in your charge phase or your opponent's shooting phase. So if you're worried about Overwatch, you can use the stratagem then. If you're worried about getting shot up, which is probably the more likely scenario, in your opponent's shooting phase, you can use that stratagem then as well.
I like that one a lot. I think that's really good.
Well, if you're taking Warriors, which again, I don't know if I can advise that yet without, but you guys made some good points or whatever. This is an affordable, CP option. As a matter of fact, most of the things in this book are 1 CP. Now, a lot of them are situational or they only affect one type of unit or, you know, one class of bug or whatever. But you can like easy access to using them. You can just use them when it comes up instead of, you know, necessarily feeling like you have to hoard CP for a fringe case.
No, totally true. Well, have we given the bugs enough love? Have we placated the swarming masses?
Man, see, okay, but what is, you know, how do you make a Tyranid list work right now? I mean, I made it clear that I think Exocrines are worth it, but, you know, do you take more than one, you know, because you can't buff 2 of them with the stratagem, you know, during a turn?
Well, I do think, I always like taking more than one of a big killer unit. Like, redundancy is always good. And the alpha strike potential of so many armies is just so strong. You're likely to lose it turn 1. So 2, I don't think is a bad idea. But on top of that, I would really look into, so a lot of Tyranid players get stuck in the mindset of Tyranids have to be aggressive. I think Tyranids are a very, very good defensive army. Things like Hive Guard, Biobores, now Exocrines, with Malanthropes or Venomthropes support, flying Hive Tyrants that can deep strike, and still have very relevant strength 6 firepower. They can make 2 damage with a stratagem. And then on top of that, you keep like 1 or 2 pocket really killer units, like a unit of 20 Gene Stealers just in the back lines to play defense. And then like something like Old One Eye, because he'll just go and he will absolutely flog a knight in 1 turn. He will smash his ankles so hard that guy will fall down.
He punches, you know, higher than his weight, essentially for point values.
Absolutely, yeah. He's a beast. I highly suggest Old One Eye, just because on top of him being a beast, he's freaking cool.
What's the Swarm Lord's points in Chapter Approved?
250. I don't think any of their special characters changed.
I don't think they changed. And, you know, if we're talking about Tyranid lists now, there's a few things that you generally see. One of them is the Swarm Lord. There's usually at least one max unit of Gene Stealers to get, you know, shuffled up the board as quickly as possible. And then there's also frequently, and my buddy Micah uses this quite a bit, a Trigon Prime surrounded by 30 Devil Gaunts that just pops up and drops a bunch of... Yeah, and repeatedly, and this is something he's been talking to me about as he's been trying to revise what his bugs are going to be like, the Trigon Prime just isn't pulling its weight so far as its points are concerned. So instead, he's considering taking some of the stuff that has recently dropped in points, like the Mycetic Spore, to bring the Devil Gaunts in one of those, or maybe bring in something like the Horror Specs in one of those, because it has such a cheaper, you know, price point, and you mean a
Tyrannocyte?
Yeah, Tyrannocyte. Mycetic Spore might be what it was called back in 4th edition.
Everyone used to put the red, what was it, the Doom and Malentite in the pot.
Yeah. I hated that thing.
Everyone. I hated it so much.
Yep. I'm having flashbacks, guys. Someone
help.
Health and Human Services, we have an emergency. The Doom of Malentai, he's twitching again. If you put it in one of those, you don't have as many dudes that you can fit in there, but you can put monsters and stuff in there too. So, I mean, how does that feel to have it's like a drop pod with better shooting, right? They can carry a big monster that you could potentially get, you know, with Behemoth, with the reroll charges and the different things that you can do. Like, there's definitely more options out there for Tyranid players who are looking to play aggressive, but I agree with you that there are definitely defensive plays. I mean, what about, let's consider Turvagons with reinforcing Gaunts for something like Engineers in an ITC environment. Because I believe those got a point drop as well. Like, so those things are also more interesting as a choice than perhaps they were before. And I don't think there's any one right way to Tyranid right now. It used to always just be Hive Guard for the double shot, Swarm Lord, big unit of Gene Stealers, rush them up the table. Like, those were the things that were always in there. And maybe you'd see something like Exocrines. Maybe you'd see like another unit of Hive Guard. There's usually like what is that thing called? The Malanthrope around to kind of mess with enemy shooting coming in. There are things that just kept popping up, but I think now you can expect to see some of these different bugs.
Well, I think it's a very much similar treatment to what Necrons have got. So Necron had like this one main play, and they had a bunch of fringe stuff that could be good if, but, maybe, when. And now a lot of those things have just been brought up to the same kind of points efficacy as that main build, like that having the Deceiver dropping points, or Necrons, Wraiths dropping points, Vargard, Oberyn, Lich Guard, Flayed Ones, all these things all of a sudden they were on the fringe, and they're like, maybe one day they'll be good. Today is the day. They actually might just be great right now. I think Tyranids are in a very similar spot, like an Exocrine. Exocrine was good. You just could never get much value out of it because it was just like a big unit that everyone just, it had a target painted on it. But now you can realistically take two, maybe three, without a huge, like, without investing even a quarter of your points, 155 times three. That's not even a quarter of your army. That's a lot of toughness, 8 wounds. I really, really, really like the idea of engineer termagants, like 30 engineer termagants with a Turbogon. Like, it's just so hard to get those points. And it's like shooting at a drop pod. You're like, I know it's a waste of shots. I need to do this though.
Yeah. It's like, do I feel sad inside by having to fire at this thing, or do I let him get a point or two?
Exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. So that's very true as well. So I think you're absolutely right, Chris.
All right. Well, guys, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about some of the stuff that happened over the weekend.
Let's do it.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back. Still got Chris and Adam here.
Keeling the rudder.
Still, yeah.
Proud to be still representing our sponsor from Discount Games. If you guys have not checked them out, please do. Especially, you know, if you're trying to pick up things for your other gaming buddies, maybe for the holidays on the cheap, I definitely suggest hitting Jay up. He's an amazing dude. Eldar.
All right, so
Eldari.
Eldar, yes, our last super faction to touch on. And
yeah, that's old Mafia, big old beat and switch.
Yeah, you guys thought we were done. We were talking about the fluffy, nice, lovely Tyranids. They just want to eat you. They just want your biomass. And now we've got to talk about Eldar. Like,
and their annoying tricks. They can
no
pointy ear tricks.
Yeah. So this is kind of a little bit of my doing, but I just wanted to bring light to the fact that what happened upon release for Eldar was when their codex came out, things like Dark Reapers, Shining Spears, Guardians, things, a lot of the mainstay units came down in points. And then people started using that stuff in conjunction with Yunari, and it got exponentially more powerful. Like, you got twice the value.
It was rules on rules. I mean, you can't have an addition. I mean, really, let's think about what happened is we made it, we started playing an addition that was like specific about not stacking rules. And then you give somebody the ability to stack rules. And it was like, whoa, this is like really crazy. Like, we all knew this. Everybody knew this.
But do you seriously know? It was doctrines before doctrines. Though, wasn't it? It was like you had your craft world unit, then you had your Nari doctrine.
That's actually not a bad way of looking at it.
Yeah, wow. I just thought of that then. It's actually pretty apt. Damn,
that's really meta. Cool. My mind is just kind of blown right now.
Except the doctrines are perfect, and shooting twice Dark Reapers does not feel perfect if you're not playing with the Dark Reapers.
Yeah, that's very true.
Although it was so satisfying to shoot Dark Reapers twice.
Yeah, I'm not sure anyone else agrees with you.
It felt good.
I'm sure it did. It felt terrible to me. I was playing guard then, and I was like, oh, here's these Dark Reapers. I will literally never be able to shoot, because first turn, they come out of their Wave Serpent, they shoot twice, kill all my line of sight shooting, and then fire and fade into a box. I'm like... so good. That was so good.
Like, I do understand being on the receiving end of it is not a satisfying experience. But again, we kind of knew that, but it was powerful, and it ruled the roost for a certain period of time.
Yeah, it was like almost, it was 9 months or so where Yunari was just at the peak of the game.
They survived three facts. Like,
three facts, yeah. Stayed on the top of three facts. And it was only after all the other codexes started coming out that they actually started dropping off. Like, they were strong through the first Space Marines and Grey Knights and Imperial Guard. And then there was Chaos, and then it was Eldar. And then after that, we had Tau, Necrons, Tyranids, and Space Marines, Space Wolves. So Space Wolves, Dark Angels, all that stuff. And they just, none of that stuff could cope. Because firstly, it was the Craft World Codex, which was and still is a very, very, very well-balanced, powerful book.
Full massive things are still, like, I think the reason you don't see more of it today is because people just played it out. They just wanted to be doing something different right now.
Well, see, all their tricks, though, are so played out that everyone knows them. There's no real surprises you can do with Eldar now that are going to actually shock people.
But it just works sometimes, man. I mean, like, one Wave Serpent can still sometimes tank an entire turn of shooting by itself.
Literally, I've seen one Wave Serpent survive an entire Moncard Tau army. Because Tau cannot scratch that guy. The minus one, the like minus two, sometimes minus three to hit, minus one damage, toughness seven, which is the killer for Tau. That all of a sudden the Riptides are actually bad, very, very bad at killing a Wave Serpent.
A single Wave Serpent, 114 points or something.
A single Wave Serpent. Yeah, that's holding armies.
Yeah,
getting angry just listening to you guys.
I know, it was frustrating. They were frustrating. The thing is that they still are. They haven't got any worse. The game's just pivoted away from them. They're just worse in relation to things like Space Marines. And one of the reasons that is because of the new rerolls. You reroll everything. So the minuses to hit don't just mean you lose dice out of your pool. You still get a chance to make those dice relevant now with the new Space Marine rerolls, which is the rerolls that Call always had, if you guys know what I'm talking about.
Yep. Well, you reroll all hits. So you don't reroll failed hits, which is big. You reroll all hits.
So if I'm hitting on fives, I used to be a full third of the dice that I was rolling used to be, you know, the threes and fours just get removed. They're just gone from my pool. I don't get to interact with them anymore as soon as I roll them. And I just get to reroll the ones and twos. And then a third of the ones I reroll for there. Sorry. And then two thirds of the ones I reroll there become irrelevant again because they're one, two, threes, and fours. And so it was huge. You're essentially knocking off almost half the dice, even if they had four rerolls to hit. But now it's massively different. Like, a 5+ with a reroll is percentage-wise just shy of a 3+. So 5+ with a rerolling all dice is actually very, very good. But onto some of the points changes. That was a lovely tangent. Why I wanted to touch on these guys is because the three or four big mainstay units of Eldar, firstly, the Reapers and the Shining Spears, they've both gone back to their Codex points, how they were pointed when the Codex first came out. Let me see if I can just pull that up quickly. Dark Reapers now are starting at 9 points, and I think it's 22 for their Reaper launcher. Where is it?
Dark Reapers in the Codex were 5 points originally.
Yeah, actually, that's crazy.
I mean,
just grinding my teeth over here.
Reaper launcher is 22 points, so that puts them at 31 points for a Dark Reaper. Now, I think that's fine. That's pretty good for what they bring. That's essentially
Reaper launcher. I mean, it was pricey then too. It was 22 points then as well, but the Reaper itself was, you know, basically just dirt cheap.
Yeah, so it's 4 points more than it was in the Codex. So it's still come down. I think it's probably just about perfect where it is right now. Shining Spears are 20 points in Chapter Approved.
Reaper shooting once are good. Again, for the same things we just talked about. You could put them in a... They never get the minus to hit, so they're always firing predictably. You know, that's very important. And for everything you just mentioned, that they can live inside this wave serpent, which is sometimes just such a foil. They can jump behind out of line of sight with a low command point investment.
Yeah, they're phenomenally good.
Yeah.
What's the name of the Shining Spear's actual spear?
The spear itself?
It's a laser lance. Yeah,
a laser lance, yeah.
Yeah, so that's 8 points. That's 28 points. And then I'm assuming the twin shuriken catapult is free. Because it sounds like it should be free, doesn't it?
The twin shuriken catapult is 5 points. Is 2 points in now? Is it
points in the book? Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's good.
So laser lance is 8.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's 10 points on top of their base. So they're 30 points for a shining spear. I think that's very good. I think that's fine, especially with they've all just got a whole new layer of buffs, and you can. If people don't know, you can make a shining spear Exarch have a 2+ invulnerable save with protect. So that is very good, and they're still a good unit. You can still quicken them or you can still deep strike them with the Beltan strat for the, I think it's a 7 to charge. There's still a lot of value there, and they're still a very strong multi-purpose unit. They're quick, they're moderately resilient, but they're very buffable. They shoot really well, and they kill really well in combat.
Shoot really decently with their catapults that come standard on the bike, but then the laser lance has the ranged profile, which is, you know, doesn't suck.
Yes, like strength 6 minus 4 2 damage. It's fantastic, I think. And then I think the Exarch's one's strength 8.
Well, you know, you're just from being functional, like that 30 points gets a long way. You get to shoot at things at a 12 inch range band. You get to shoot at things at a 6. You know, what is it? I think the laser lance has a much lower range.
Yeah, I think it's pretty small.
I want to say it's like 8, 9-ish, maybe even 6-inch range or whatever. So, but they've got the long movement, so you can move them up and quicken them too if you need to. And then they get to fire at something that may be what your tertiary target is, fire something else at your secondary target, and charge your primary target. So they've just affected three things with one unit.
They're so versatile. They're good for any occasion, any army. They're never going to be a bad choice. Like, you're never going to take them and be like, well, these guys have nothing to do with this game. They're always going to get value. So I think they should be a cornerstone in
Eldar. Well, they saw a lot of play with Yunari when Yunari was back where it was. They saw a ton of play because you could basically move them 100 inches a turn. Like, there was nothing that was out of bounds. That was it.
I used to joke playing tournaments that Yunari used to make you play stupid 40k because there's no other army in the game makes you deploy in like such a silly, silly way. I've got this aggressive shooty army and I need to deploy it all within 6 inches and everyone's touching so that no one can be wrapped and everyone can really intervene and nothing's going to get left out in the wind and there's no screen because everyone's screening each other and there's this little ball and it's like, just play stupid 40k just because Yunari exists.
Yeah, that's, so I mean, it's good that it's not. And we're talking about the Spectre from an age past now at this
yes.
point.
Yeah. Another one that went down that I really wanted to talk about was the Warlock Skyrunner Conclave. Now, they're started 48 points per model at the moment. I'm just going to check what they are in the Codex, because I believe they're around 60 or something in the Codex.
The Warlock Conclave are 30 points apiece. But that's not. Sorry, the Skyrunners are yeah. 60 points apiece.
There was 65 in the. There were 60 points.
A single Skyrunner is 65. The Conclave, you know, which is the group 2 to 10, was 60 points apiece.
And now they're down to 48. Now I'm not sure if they've gone down in another chapter approved, but now that's another 2 points for the Shuriken Catapult. We know that we've got the twin Shuriken Catapult on them, so that's up to 50. So that's up to 50 points. And then they've got either the Witchblade or the there's a glaive.
Yeah, the Witchblade is zero, and then
I think they're both zero.
No, there's one I think that you can throw the spear. Do they get the spear?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, see, it should be a singing spear.
Yeah, singing spear is 5 points.
5 points. So 45 points for the Warlock Conclave. Now they come with a 4 plus invulnerable, 2 wounds, movement 16 or something ridiculous. But what's crazy here now is that with their extra layer of buffs from Psychic Awakening, they become very reliable. So people used to take these guys. This is what used to be a fringe unit. Some people could make this good. You had to be quite a savvy player, because there was armies where this unit didn't really work, because what the whole idea was that you take this unit of 10 Skyrunner Warlocks, and then you buff them to the absolute nines. You give them Protect, you give them Conceal, you give them, is it Fortune, the 5-plus Invulnerable, 5-plus Feel No Pain, and so you get them to a 3-plus Invulnerable with Ally Tox, so they're minus 2 base, make them minus 3 with Lightning Fast Reflexes. You make them have a 3-plus Invulnerable, 5-plus Feel No Pain.
The Protect, plus 1 Armor Save, plus 1 Save, not Armor Save, plus 1 Save.
Plus 1 save, yeah. So they come with a 4-plus invulnerable save, so then they'll go to a 3-plus.
And then you just layer all these... subtract 1 from their hit roll to hit them.
Yeah. So you just layer all these buffs on them, and they become this... They essentially just become an old-school Death Star. The problem was the 4-plus deny powers, like, you know, Black Templars or Iron Hands will just go, bang, I'll just deny that. Protect, and then you've got a 4-plus invulnerable, and then you can just shoot them down, or you get 1 turn out of 6, especially in a tournament when you've got 6 turns out of 5 games or 6 games. So it's like 30 rounds. You're going to get 1 round. You're going to get 1 turn where all your stuff doesn't work, because they're all 7s to get off. Now, a lot of the new stuff that's come out has made this a lot more reliable to get your powers off. Firstly, there is the
6s or 7s for some of these. So Protect is 7, yep. though, and that's one of the main ones.
Yeah, Protect is literally the main one, I think. Without Protect, none of it can work. Especially now that the minuses to hit aren't as big a deal as they used to be. Because a -3 to hit is actually still really good. I think -3 is now the new -2. -1 is actually not that relevant at all anymore, because 4s rerolling is very, very good for Space Marines. But make Space Marines hit on 6s rerolling. Now that is the new sweet spot. So then being able to get to -3 is very, very relevant, but having a 3-plus vulnerable save is the kicker.
Well, and now let me take one step back, if that's okay. So the for people that don't know, the runes of battle, they are this the stuff that warlocks can take. The Farseers have a separate tree altogether, and they come with a positive and a negative power. So like conceal slash reveal and protect slash jinx. So jinx is something you can cast offensively, which subtract 1 from all saving throws of a unit that you want to target. So you're making it easier to kill your opponent. And then in match play games, Protect and Jinx are separate powers. So you could cast Protect on yourself and then Jinx on an opponent.
Yeah. Yep. And I think the Conclave, when it's got 10 guys, is it 3 powers?
3 powers.
10 dudes?
Yeah.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, they become very good as well. So there's usually you'll take a Farseer, a Warlock, and that Warlock most of the time will take the Bale Tan Gem, which I think gives it rerolls to Psyche tests. And of course, the Farseer comes with the Runes of Fate as well, so they already get a reroll. And then there's the Seer Council stratagem, which is in the basic rulebook. It's 1 CP. Uses stratagem in a psychic phase. A Craft World Farseer unit is within 6 of a friendly Craft World Warlock unit. You can add 1 to the results of the psychic tests for both units. So that makes that reliable, a lot more reliable as well. So they get +1, so 6s become 5s, so 7s become 6s. But then there's another layer. There's actually 2 more layers, Paul, because I actually found the one I was talking
about.
I actually found the one I was talking about. Because me and Paul were talking about this during the break, and with Chris as well. And we were looking for, because one of my friends told me this council can now be quite good because you can get the powers off reliably. And he told me about one of the buffs, and we spent like 5 minutes off camera, off recording, just being like, where is this buff? I can't find it. So the first one is one of the new craft world options when you make a custom craft world, is to make any ones you roll for your psychic powers into twos. So you can't actually roll ones anymore. So if you roll any of your dice, any ones for a psychic test are automatically count as a two. So that means if you'll get plus one to that, all of a sudden, like those twos, you only need a six to get most of these off. So a two and a four will get any power
that
off.
That greatly reduces your perils of the warps, I mean, as well.
And you can't perils, exactly right. The next one was, this is a Runes of Fate, Runes of Fortune. This is a new psychic power, guys, and this is what I was looking for. It's called Focus Will. It's warp charge six, so warp charge five with a plus one. Select a friendly craft world psyker within six. Until the end of your psychic phase, add two to any psychic tests they make. So that's a big deal, because if you put that on that Farseer, so the council can cast that on the Farseer who already has plus one, and the Farseer has ones that count as twos already, and the Farseer has the Runes of Fate, so it gets to reroll. So all of a sudden that Farseer needs a four on 2d6 with ones counting as twos to get off any of those powers. So it can't fail, guys. Double ones count as a four, and he's got plus three, so it gets a warp charge seven power off on Saint Eyes. That's what makes this thing work now, because it's actually... you actually can't, without negatives to hit from like shadows in the warp or a couple of other things, you can't fail to cast these powers.
Not failing is good. Being impossible to fail.
Impossible to fail. You just—it's like it's like paying a stratagem without paying the CP. Like, I don't want protect. Well, it looks like I get it off. I want jinx. Looks like I get it off. The only thing that can stop you is your opponent denying you. So as long as that guy's outside 24 of other psychers, you're just going to get those buffs.
And this is important too, because you know we were talking about that. You know, buffing the psychers. There is the conclave power specifically that allows you to double the range of one of your powers. So some of these things only have 18 inches. So you know you got to be up close in deny range, or one of these snap denies like a Black Templars or the Iron Hands. You got to be up close and personal. Being able to double that range, especially maybe in turn one, to give you a heavier Alpha Strike, puts you out of deny range. So even exactly if you do get the right, four, so they're not. They can't stop you.
Yeah, exactly right. So it's a lot easier for you to keep yourself out of the eye range. And all of a sudden, those psychic powers that are pivotal to making your army work are just so reliable. So reliable. I think it's quite a big deal for craft worlds. And I think that is something that could put them back near the top, which annoys me. So just saying that annoys me, because they've been so good forever. Take your time at the bottom, guys. Take it on the chin. Take it with some good grace. Can't keep them down.
They haven't been bad. It's just been good the whole time. You think the game has pivoted away, but I think it's more just a case of that they just been played a lot and people want to try and do something different.
Yeah, that's very relevant as well. Absolutely right, mate. We'll want to touch on Harlequins and Dark Eldar quickly, or Drukhari.
Yep.
So the only ones that jump out to me as, firstly, one that hasn't changed is Grotesques. Grotesques seem like they've stayed the same. I'm not 100% sure, but I've been told they've stayed the same, because I don't quite know what they were before. Right now, they're 32 points, and I believe that is exactly what they were before. But the ones that have gone up is Talos. Talos have gone up, I think, by between 15 and 25 points, and that is pretty significant.
They seem always like a value. They were not included. Whenever I was building up like a dream Drukhari list, I always like, well, I got to have three Talos, six Talos in here.
Yeah, exactly right. It's just such a good anvil unit to... It's your reliable core of your army where you can build stuff around. So and also I think Ravages went up as well. So those are two decent whacks, if that's true. Disintegrators, 15 points. I got a feeling that's gone up. Let's see if I've got the Dark Elder Codex here.
I'll break out.
It's one of the only ones I don't have. I've got chapter approved last year.
I know it's a little late in the show, but I'll break out 2018's chapter approved and see.
Man, smashing it. So three disintegrators are 45 points on top of a 95-point Ravager. So that's 140 points for a Ravager. That seems like it's gone up. I think they were 120 before. So a 20-point increase on a Ravager is actually significant, because they're not very, very survivable. Their damage output is very significant. And on top of that, damage output has never been more relevant, because strength 5, minus 3, 2 damage, fantastic profile against Marines. It's good against anything Marines bring. But if you're paying a lot more points for that, I'm not sure they're going to continue being such an auto take.
No, probably not. With poison being, you know, fine, the volume of fire. Other options.
Like Venom seem really good now.
Grotesque still hold up really well. Things like Vexator Mask, you know, does really well against things like the Centurions. I mean, that you're going to see.
Sexy. Oh, dude, so sexy against the Centurions. So good. Love it.
I think they're still going to be doing just fine, even if the Ravager, when people took them, and they didn't always take them, you know, sometimes you saw the planes or you just didn't see anything like that at all.
Mm. That's true. Well, the disintegrators have gone up, as I think they have. I think they were 10 points, maybe even 9 points before. They might have gone up by 5 points, or I might be completely talking out of my rear. But I really think Ravagers were between 110 and 120 points before, and now that they're 140, I think that's actually really bad. The Talos increase isn't that big because I think Grotesques take the spot of Talos very easily. In some way, in a lot of mission structures, in a lot of ways, Talos, especially in ITC, Talos give up a lot of ITC points. Grotesques don't give up anywhere near as much, only give up gangbusters, and they are a lot more, they are just as survivable, if not more survivable, because you can actually go through walls, their infantry, you can hide them. There's a lot more ways to keep them alive. Item on the table. Yeah,
you need very little luck to make them good, which is always a bonus.
One of my favorite models in all of Warhammer is a Mandrake. Yes. And they're 15 points a mod now.
Yes. I'm hoping they are some of the coolest looking models, but that's not different. I mean, that's a 1 point discount.
Really? It's only down by 1 point.
Yeah.
Boo! I was like, please tell me that they're good now.
No, in the codex, they're 16 points apiece. I don't think they ever got a change. Yeah. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think they got a change.
I'm disappointed. I love them so much
because they're one of the best looking models in the game. Even they're like their paint job. They seem to have like their amazing paint jobs on the box and stuff. It's
they're so cool. They're so freaky.
So a Ravager in the codex was 80 points.
Okay, so it's gone up 15 points on the chassis. How much were disintegrator cannons in the codex?
I'm not looking at chapter approved, but I mean, I'm just looking at the codex. So disintegrator cannons were 15 points apiece.
Okay, so they've stayed the same. I was talking out of my butt, guys. They have stayed exactly the same. Apologies for all that. But yeah, so the Ravager's gone up 15 points. That means they were 25 points in the codex, and now they've gone up to 140. Sorry, 125. Now they've gone to 140. Might not be the death knell for him, but maybe three being an auto include isn't the way to go now. The only other one
they can be very killy. Like these guys have never been, and in my opinion, all that great at killing Marines outside of the disintegrators and stuff. And then volume of fire. So I think you got to go one way or the other. But if you're not going the covens,
yeah. It's true. You can still just take a bunch of Venoms full of racks. Like, it's still a play.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no. Covens, I think, got it made. Like, they are very positioned very well for dealing with Marines.
I agree. Then the other one that I thought was quite funny was Drazar went down in points. He's now he got a new model, got a whole swathe of new rules that make him an absolute blender, and he went down in points as well. It's Mephiston all over again.
Yeah, being a Blood Angel player. I mean, we just talked about like there was wholesale cuts. You know, the blue light special on character models, and I don't mind that
seriously
because you know they're part of like the fabric. I don't beat a phrase to death, but like the DNA of the universe or whatever. And so seeing them on the table more frequently doesn't hurt my feelings.
Yeah, me either. And the model is sexy. It's straight up sexy.
Well, there's been a stigma over the years of like, oh, I can't believe you're playing a named character. I can't believe it. Because sometimes they had aggressive rules, or maybe they weren't as fairly costed or whatever as their whatever their favorite named character was, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
There's
right.
always
yeah.
been some, we can always figure out some reason why we don't like what that somebody has taken on the table or whatever.
Mm.
But if they all go this direction of being like cool and, you know, some unique, a little bit of unique rules, maybe a little bit better than a non-name character for same, you know, they get a little bit more of a collection of stuff than you could build yourself sometimes maybe, and they're all kind of pointed in a favorable way. I don't mind that.
Yeah, no, I don't mind it either. I think it's good. I like seeing special characters on the table. I think it just adds a level of thematic awesome that you can't get elsewhere.
Yeah.
So I think we'll just touch quickly on Harlequins, and then we can just do whatever you boys want to do. talk about, you know,
well,
sweet
I'm not done talking about the covens here, man. So I want to back up what I'm talking about with the fact that they're positioned well against the Marines. So, you know, what we've seen really popular build is Centurions. Centurions are like a triple double threat. They got a large number of wounds. They've got good shooting and they've got a good assault. You know, there's basically, and Grotesque don't care about any of that.
That's true. Yeah, because you're always getting that 4+, you're always getting that 4+ invuln. They've got very good toughness against their shooting, and they're not getting doubled out by their attacks in combat. So they're getting wounded on 5s from range and still getting a 4+ invuln. They're getting wounded by 3s and not 2s in combat, which I think pretty much only vehicles and knights apart from them can claim that. And they're still getting that 4+ invuln. And on top of that, they're 4 wounds. Then the difference between 3 wounds and 4 wounds can't be understated. It's actually huge in the game.
To their 6 models or whatever, you've got 10. And so you just simply have more booty on the table to absorb some of this. And then when you throw in that Vexator mask, it does like 3 things. I mean, I think it does 2 things. It denies Overwatch. So that's actually big when you're charging into 6 Hurricane Bolters and Flamers and stuff. I mean, it's significant right there. It's more difficult to outmaneuver Centurions than you think, because nobody's taking Centurions without movement shenanigans. Like they're going to get, you know, a double move or a 3d6 charge or something, you know, like it's more difficult to outmaneuver them than it may appear on their data slate. And these are due to like White Scars and Raven Guard and that kind of stuff. But the Vexator mask takes care of all of that.
Yeah.
Make some fight
literally
last.
One-stop shop.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's an auto-include, and we know we've talked about it before, but I'm saying that positions the Coven build still quite well. I mean, it's a powerful list, but it positions it. It still has a place right now with very little changes, and it doesn't seem like it was too impacted by chapter approved.
No, it wasn't. In ETC formats, I saw more Talos, because Talos were very reliable in ETC format. They didn't give up all the secondaries. But in ITC, Grotesques were hands down the better option. And I think that's the trend that's going to go global now. So Grotesques, 100%, fantastic for 32 quads.
Yep. Now, there's only one model for Grotesques, so I think it's stepping out, doing a little bit of creativity. You know, what is it, the Crypt Horrors or whatever from the Sigmar line?
Yeah, they seem to be the go-to, but there's a lot of options now.
There's a Rat Ogre. It's not Rat Ogres. It's like the mechanized Rat Ogres.
Storm Fiends. Yeah, Storm Fiends.
Those also make, I think, good.
They make some great ones.
Sorry, I know you want to talk about Harlequins, but I think it was important to kind of go over some of that stuff as to why it might still be good and what to look out for.
So just briefly, the one that's the big change is the troop. The Harlequin troop went down to, I think it was 2 points per model. It went down from 13 to 11.
Now, we were talking about percentages in the very part of the very beginning of the show. That's, you're getting 20% more Harlequins, 22% or whatever more Harlequins on the table than you had yesterday.
Yep, and I think that's fantastic. I think Harlequin Troop is actually a very flexible and solid option in the right hands. So I have a mate who, his name's Liam Hackett. He was the guy who kind of made Meganobs famous. He was the Meganob playing Australian Orc guy. And at ETC on like the second top table of the singles, he played against this guy running 3 units of 10 Harlequin Troops. He was a Russian player. And this guy's unit of 10 Harlequins went through all 20 of Liam's Meganobs in one turn.
No way.
They just fly kicked their heads straight off their shoulders.
How on earth does that happen? I mean, because sometimes the Harlequin player is like, well, I would have had that game, but my opponent brought Bolters.
Yeah, exactly right. So there's the Harlequin double move, which is very relevant. It means you can keep them safe but out of line of sight, and then when you need them, slingshot them in.
Sure,
you can make them get the auto 6 advance, so that when they get their advance and charge, so that they move really, really quickly. On top of that, he had the one that's he had the +1 attack mask form, and then he attacked twice and spent a bunch of CP with a bunch of extra striking powers. And man, he just blitzed them. He went absolutely nuts and he just killed them all. It was fearsome to see. And I thought
that's
what
you do it though.
Brilliant.
I mean, if you spending those 10 CPs, and we'll talk about this in just a minute, but you burn all those 10 CPs and it puts you in a position to where your opponent can't recover, then it's CP well spent. Like, don't be shy.
If you're spending 10 CP in one turn and you're not winning the game, don't spend those 10 CP in one turn. that's my rule. That's my rule of thumb. I just made it up then, but it sounds good.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you got to swing it. You know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
That's actually right. You're right.
And you miss 100% of the dice that you command point reroll.
That is also true.
Yeah. So true. But yeah, I'm really hoping this means I'll see more Harlequins on the table, because I actually love Harlequins. I think they are, firstly, they're the hobbyists. They're the painter's dream army.
You said nightmare wrong.
Yeah, I'm trying to get you. I've got Harlequins. I've started some of them, especially like last year, I think. I vowed that I was going to paint some Harlequins. And I painted some, but there's just a couple of, I won't tackle some models until I hit like that next threshold. And maybe I shouldn't wait. Maybe these models will get me to that threshold.
Yeah, I just think that a well-painted Harlequins army is one of the best-looking armies that could ever be on a table.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was making the correlation between them and old fantasy Bretonians, because they used to have all the horses. They also had the individual livery and their own coat of arms and all these. You can just see some guys just go absolutely crazy and paint them all individually with all individual freehand, and phenomenal. I just feel like Harlequins give that same depth to the painter.
Oh, I saw I was watching a Blood Angel tutorial by Darren Latham. It was, you know, and now he's got a mega popular YouTube channel where he goes over meticulous detail about how to paint really well. And he used Sotek Green mixed with a little corn red to shade the recesses of a Blood Angel's armor. And I'm like, hey, man.
I have both of those colors.
I said, look, in my mind, I'm thinking, yo, that's crazy. And I'm never doing that in my Blood Angels. It's Seraphim Sepia or nothing. And then I'm like, but that might look really good on a Harlequin boot.
It's true. It's true.
Anyway, sorry, didn't want to sidetrack us on the hobby talk, but Harlequins, sometimes they do. I mean, they really do melt. I was joking about bolters, but that's what kills them. If you got the dudes on the table, is just small arms fire. You know, anything north of a las gun could be your nemesis.
That's true. But even, man, I used to feel really bad about first rank, second rank firing unit of 10 guardsmen into Harlequins.
Yeah,
like. I got like 37 shots coming out of these 10 guys that cost.
Yeah, out of these
no
40
points.
Yeah.
Yeah, into your, what used to be, I think, 16 or 17 point Harlequins. And I'm just killing like six of them. And you're like, oh, this is,
You don't want. Absolutely agree. But see, now these points are significant because if you spend it just on troops or more Harlequins, you've got at least one more spot of Harlequins on the table.
Yep, exactly right, dude.
And without compromising any of your other bikes and stuff, like the stuff that does a lot of your work for you with your mortal wounds and haywire and stuff.
Yeah, spot on.
I like it.
So I hear you guys, you both of you have played some Blood Angels games recently.
Yeah, well, Chris, you actually played in a tournament. And this is, I think, were you using the old Blood Angels?
That's right. I was using the pre-Blood of Ball Blood Angels at the Rudder GT that happened in Utah this last weekend. The largest tournament we've had in Utah yet, which is great. We were just shy of an ITC major, but we had 52 players show up, which I feel like is still a pretty significant number. And I ended up taking sixth. So I was very happy with it. Went 4-1, played some excellent games with some excellent opponents, a couple fans of the show, and people that have either been blessed or ruined over the course of years of gaming together in the community. It was a really, really good time. And it was nice to kind of end the old era of Blood Angels on such a positive note. And what was the real thing that just kind of blew my mind, though, about this list that I brought, Paul?
I'm listening.
It was Astoreth's one-use ability.
Mass of Doom?
Mass of Doom. I used it 4 out of 5 games, and I counted the number of Thunderhammer hits that my Death Company made because they were Mass of Doomed that they would have otherwise missed, and it was over 20. Over 20 Thunderhammer hits connected because I got a +1, and I over the course of the tournament, and that ended up making like such a big difference in so many of the games. And it was a pure Blood Angel list, no assassins, no Inquisitors, all infantry, and I really fell in love with some of the stuff that I did. I painted about 20 new models for this army, including 10 Inceptors. I did 2 squads of 5 Inceptors, and those guys, you know, despite not having any special weapons or AP on their melee attacks, they really had some great mileage for me. I think the favorite trick that I did, though, was using the new Phobos Librarian and kind of psyching out an opponent, deploying his Ogryns in the corner, and then using Tenebrous Curse on them, so they literally never got to do anything.
They can never do
Yeah. I threw some units over there just to kind of fake them out and get them to, you know, put a bunch of guys over in that one corner, and then I just moved everything else in the other direction. Yeah, he killed a couple of units over there, but then they were stuck. There's no way they could have gotten across the board after being in the back corner.
Oh, you mentioned you went 4-1 and you lost. I think we mentioned to Gene Slayer Cults.
Yeah, I did.
Which is a tough nut to crack. I mean,
it is.
For an assault army with somebody who has better assault for cheaper, like we were just talking about, they have, you know, their farm equipment runs through Marines on good days. It runs through the superpowered Marines.
Mm-hmm. I made some really critical mistakes on that game, and that if I had won that, I would have gone on to play in the finals round, which was, I'm really kicking myself over this, but I ended up getting tabled at the top of turn one because I went second because I misread when tabling was checked for and put a bunch of stuff in reserve trying to, you know, insure it a little bit against some of the Alpha Strike and wanting the Genes to their Cult player to kind of come out and show his units so that I could end up charging and attacking them. And if his strategy had failed and if I had had one model survive, then, you know, it would have been game over for him once my powerful assault units came in at the bottom of turn two. But the dice were in his favor. I made some pretty critical errors myself that enabled him to even get to roll those critical dice in the first place. And it was a bummer. It was a bummer to be on kind of that strong of a run and to get shut down right there. But then, you know, game five, I turned it around and I didn't, you know, it's easy when you're on a roll to just kind of hit a snag and then check out. But one of the nice things about the community here and the environment, you know, was, yeah, I made some mistakes, but it's a next game I'm going to do better kind of support, not just internally, but from everyone around. It's like, oh, man, well, now you know that's not going to happen again. And then thinking of the future as well is like, there were several times I'm looking at a situation on the table. I'm thinking like, if this was going on next week, there would have been no hope for this person. I think, well, you can relate to that feeling.
Well, I got the opportunity to play, you know, with the new Blood Angels from the Blood Bowl, which it's like night and day. I mean, so I played against an Iron Hands list, pretty stout Iron Hands list. It's actually the one I've been running. My buddy, my playtest buddy came over and was like, you know, I don't even know what do you want him to feel like, whatever. He's like, I'll just play the Iron Hands. I actually had the model still when I traveled with them. They were all ready to go. Like, cool. Put it on the table. Everything went right for me, though. I went first. You know, it's one of those things. But I'd committed. In my list, I had two units of Sanguinary Guard, two 10-man units of Sanguinary Guard, and a 15-man unit of Death Company. Astrath, Mephiston, Lamartis, a Smash Captain. I'm not messing around. Like, these are all on the list, and they all have, I think, a purpose. They're pointed aggressively. They got good rules. Anyway, so I'd already committed in my mind that I'm using Forlorn Fury no matter what. And I did. Forlorn Fury, the Death Company up there. The Forlorn Fury with the Death Company means that they get a pregame and advance move. I know we've talked about this, but I'm putting it all out there again. And then they get to move normally. So that is, you know, like a 30-inch move before the charge in turn one.
It's such an important stratagem and something that, like, if you are, you can use it aggressively and defensively, and most of the time you're going to be using it aggressively, of course. But
having two units of Sanguinary Guard also put one in reserve, and I was able to keep one back in my backfield almost to play goalie.
Yeah, were they both 10-man units? Did you say that earlier?
Yeah, both
10-man.
Yeah.
That's interesting because that's something I was thinking about. Like, we might see multiple full squads of Sanguinary Guard now. So,
well, of course, I knew how the list played. So, you know, he's got flyers. I think, well, you're going to have to push those flyers up in my face to do it and start doing a lot of damage. And these Sanguinary Guard back here in the backfield will just jump up and cut you down because they're really good at killing stuff like that, especially a Space Marine flyer with only, you know, 10 wounds.
Yeah, that's pretty well overkill at that point. I mean, unbuffed, a unit of Sanguinary Guard can sometimes take down a knight if they get the charge off. So it's not beyond reason to think that they could take maybe one or two knights with a split charge or however you feel like, or not two knights, sorry, two flyers with a split charge.
So with this, you know, with the benefit of going first, I did get really lucky with the going first. So casting Unleash Rage on the Death Company, getting a couple of the chaplain buffs off on them, you know, being in range, rerolling hits, rerolling the charge, Unleash Rage, giving them six attacks apiece on the charge because of Black Rage.
Yeah.
And then fighting twice. fought twice basically for the movement to wrap up something on there to protect me in their fighting phase, or sorry, in the enemy shooting phase. And that's, mm-hmm. I mean, even if you don't think fighting twice is important or you think it's going to be overkill, don't ever discount the movement that comes with it.
Yeah, that's really an important part of this. We've talked for years on the show about how movement wins games, and that's, I mean, it's 3 command points for, you know, 6 inches of movement ultimately, but it can really set the pace of the game. And we were talking about Tyranids and being able to consolidate 2d6 inches and how much presence that gives you on the board, how much safety that denies your opponent. Like, it can absolutely be worth the command point spent.
Yeah, and this is another one where it went all in. So, before the game, I'd spent, I don't know, 3 or 4 command points. And then after the game started, I'm burning, I went down from 13 to 3 or something after turn 1. But I was able to give, maybe by turn 2.
That sounds right.
2 or 3 command points. But I've got so much pressure on my opponent at that point that it's put them in a very unfavorable position because they got nowhere to go and I'm taking off some of their power pieces. Now, again, had the benefit of knowing what the damage dealers in the list were, or having intimate knowledge of what those were. Sometimes you can make an assessment of your opponent's list and think what you need to take out. Having be a list that I played, I knew exactly what to take out. And it was his first go with the list too. So he maybe, didn't position everything perfect. So I don't want to say this is like,
going to be reflective of all games.
Yeah. It's not going to, but with going first, with being able to get all the buffs off, and then like, It was pretty much a slugfest in turn 1 and 2, a one-sided one. The Blood Angels were just everywhere doing everything, and it felt like old times. It was really nice.
You're talking about having rerolls and things. One of the things that I benefited from in the pre-update Blood Angels was the fact that I didn't have to roll to have Astaroth's reroll ability go on anywhere, but you had Lamardi's in the list. And one of the benefits of Lamardi's, and one of the things that I think makes him a great force multiplier for Death Company and multiple units of Death Company, I think you're going to get the most mileage out of him, is the fact that his reroll aura for them is always on. You never have to roll for it. So they get to reroll hits and they get to reroll charges. And if you're bringing Death Company, it is a really tough sell to say, you know what? You don't really need Lamardi's. You want Astaroth, especially if it's a big unit. I mean, I had kind of a blunder in my first game where I removed some models and they were outside of the leadership aura from
his LD9 or auto pass or whatever.
Yep. And I ended up losing the rest of the squad to morale. I mean, the damage had pretty much already been done at that point. So it wasn't something that lost the game for me, but it was just one of those little things where it's like, oh, right. I need to remember that. Thankfully, it was the first game and I didn't make that mistake again. But, being able to have just the guarantee of those reroll hits with Lamardi's can't be understated when you're rolling around with Death Company.
So it's reroll all. It's like Lamardi's is basically like a mini chapter master.
Yeah.
So having that, and then what pushing the Death Company up so far, I own Wings of Fire Lamardi's to keep up with them.
Yep. That's
burning command points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really does have to be all or nothing. And I think, that's just as well demonstrated by my game 4 as what you're talking about here is I went half and half. I had half my army off the table. If the whole army had been on the table, there's no way I would have been tabled when he came in on turn 2. So, like, you have to commit. And I think that commitment is one of the things that makes Blood Angel games and lists a little bit more interesting is the idea. I mean, if it goes wrong, I mean, you're out there. You're out there. You have to be precise. If you're going to trap a model, you've got to make sure you tri-point that model, like just to protect the unit from being shot. Like, you have to do all of those little things to help optimize your movement at that point. It's because you're not going to be able to plan on having a lot of command points later in the game.
Yeah, especially in that situation. Well, and plus the command point stuff gives the BA now a lot of explosive power. Single, like, you could change something really in your favor with a little bit of CP investment. And so it's worth it. It's nice. You have some powerful stratagems that are affordable again with the CP. I think you need, or at least my theory was that I needed 2 battalions, and I did. I felt like if I had any less, it would have been a lot worse off for me because I wouldn't have felt as comfortable burning all the CP that I did.
Yeah, well, I tell you, one of the things that I really learned about with these games was the value of the Vanguard Space Marines. in combination with Blood Angel rules before, and in with the combination of Blood Angel rules now, one of the things that I'm planning on trying has to do with the command point to get an extra warlord trait on a model, and using that to get the Master of Deceit warlord trait on some Phobos characters, and really psych out opponents, move things around the table, and set up supporting assaults. Like, you know, this is kind of what I'm thinking. I have a Phobos librarian. I give him the Master of Deceit warlord trait, which lets you choose at the same time you would do Forlorn Fury, you know, three Vanguard units with which to redeploy, like using the same scout rules as before, right? 9 inches away from the deployment zone, and et cetera, et cetera. But if you know you're going first, you can set up your Vanguard units to support a charge by your death company for nearby units. You could use the librarian to cast buffing powers on them that maybe another one wouldn't be able to support within the range that you need. Like, there's a lot of play in there for these new Vanguard Space Marine units, and I'm really excited to test that out.
Don't forget that +1 to charge for Phobos stuff, and things like Reavers are almost like Death Company dudes.
Yeah, kind of like Death Company light, right?
Yeah. Well, this has actually been a pretty long show, so thanks everybody for hanging in. I know we're going to continue to talk about Blood Angels, especially start getting ready for tournaments coming up. Like, I'm going to be taking Blood Angels to LVO, so, you know, looking for all the feedback and looking for your experience, Chris, and what people are out there doing it. Let's go ahead and wrap this up, guys. Y'all got anything else you want to cover right now?
I just want to say thank you to the folks over at the Rudder. Seth and Thomas, who you know, Paul, who ran an excellent event and gave me a real nice opportunity to go out and roll some dice. And I don't think that, you know, while we're talking about list optimization and stuff, that just the social aspect, the great community, all of the different things that make the game worth playing, you know, all of those things happened this weekend. I think they did a great job, and thank you guys for that.
Well said, Chris. Well said. It's awesome.
Next week, we're going to have some Armageddon series news. Can't wait to talk about that. Add more tournaments. Going to announce the winner as soon as I get the scores tabulated. That's on me. Talking about prizes and such. Can't wait to do that.
Fantastic.
Going to bring some more content to this channel. I'm actually going to bring some Sigmar content to the channel, thanks to our friends over at Rolling Bad. So, again, big things are happening. It's going to be a great end of this year and a nice jump start into the next year.
Exciting stuff. And thank you for sharing all the Blood Angel stuff, guys. It gives me a lot of hope for Dark Angels, hopefully in the next book.
Oh, check out that sweet Heresy stuff in the meantime, man.
Oh, dude, it's so
good. Oh, yeah. A barrage gravity bombard gun. Oh, man.
Well, do you know what's so cool about that? It looks like the Plague Burst Crawler. So you can think that that's where they got the Plague Burst Crawler from.
Yeah, they just drove a Sakaran chassis backwards long enough that they figured, just put the gun on the other side. It'll be fine.
It's so good. I love it.
Well, we'll see you guys next week.
See you next week, guys. Thanks for having me on again, Paul.
Handle the truth.